little report from the field. This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Welcome back. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks for voting. Kim Lobey, number 34 to vote this morning in Lake County, Ohio. Incredible sense of pride when exercising your right to vote. Laura Seal in Birmingham, Alabama tweeted this. The line to vote in Hoover is wrapped around the building. This could take a while. David in Albany, New York. I voted at 7:10 a.m. Polling staff says that they were locked out of the new polling location, had to wait in the 23-degree temps as they found someone to let them in, all working smoothly now. Well, hope your voting day is simple, folks. Hope this election day comes off without a hitch. That's what I hope. But what does it take to pull off an American presidential election? Are you running a cash register by chance? Planes and trains and expensive ground games, TV spots, photo ops, bus tours and sock hops. You got strip malls in Florida, stadiums in Boulder, mailings in Wisconsin, all those chicken sandwiches made to order, fleets of choppers to cover Montana, a big campaign bus at the Cabela's in Jackson, computers for Axelrod, Rove, and a conference call to Rahm, posters for every man, woman, and child in Orlando and West Palm, data mining to see who got turned down for a job just last week and voted GOP 4 years ago after buying a Jeep. This stuff's gold. You know, gold. I say you can't spend too much. The campaign needs it all. Phone banks and smartly dressed volunteers. Binders full of precinct lists stacked neatly on HQ shelves. You add up the chink and ka-chink, and it's big, folks. Maybe three big ones. Three Bs. $3 billion in 2012. That's right. You got to believe it. $3 billion, and that's just on the presidential side of the campaign. Stephen Dubner will explain it all to us. Of course, he's the author of Freakonomics and Freakonomics Radio from Takeaway co-producer WNYC. And he's here to talk about the extraordinary expense of this election. Welcome back to The Takeaway.
Thanks, John. Happy Election Day.
Happy Election Day. Yeah. $3 billion just for the president, $6 billion for the whole thing when it's said and done. What are we getting for all that money? And what's the trend line here in the super Freakonomics way of analyzing?
Well, that was a beautifully written piece you just delivered.
Oh, get out.
And it does sound monumental, right? All the things that all that money buys and all the talk we do in these months and years leading up to the election. So I hate to just throw water on it. So I won't quite do that. But
that's
I will
why
say
we
this.
Asked you here to throw water on it.
I will say with this. First of all, $3 billion is not that much money in the American economy.
Okay.
So let's, you know, I mean, as we wrote once, I'd have to go back and check if these figures are still true. I'm quite sure they are. We spend more on chewing gum in a given year than we do on political elections, even in a presidential year. So let's not deceive ourselves. It's not really that much money. Second
okay.
of all
right.
What kind of spending is it? We'll talk about that maybe for a minute. But really what we want to get to is how much does it matter? Right? I think that's what everybody wants to know. I think we live – so I'm going to get right to that. That's the part I care about most. I think we live with a kind of fiction that says that campaigns – the more money you have, the more likely you are to win office. And I would argue that it is largely a fiction. Now, before I get to the proof, let me say with a presidential race, it's very hard to prove that because why? There's no counterfactual. We can't say, hey, you know what? You, major party candidate A, why don't you run this year without spending and let the other guy you're running against go ahead and spend all he's got? Nobody in their right mind will ever do that. What proof we do have is from looking at congressional races. So my co-author Steve Levitt, who's an economist who's done a lot of unusual research for economists, looked once at a series of congressional elections between the same candidates. In other words, candidate A and B holding steady year one and then year three or whatever it was, where you can control for things like incumbency and money. And here's what Levitt found that's pretty astonishing really, that when a candidate doubles his or her spending – if you hold everything else constant, which is not easy to do, but you try to manage that in an algorithm, they only get 1% extra of the popular vote. And if you cut your spending in half, you only lose 1% of the popular vote. So the idea that spending drives elections, I would argue, is mostly fictional. And yet we buy it because we want to have A, the media loves the horse race. It's a number that's really easy to keep track of.
Well, the media gets paid by the horse race.
Well,
literally gets the money for the commercials.
Yes and no.
Yes.
Here's the great irony to me is that the print media, which works like dogs for years covering the campaign, they don't get that jack.
Right.
I'm sorry. No, people are not putting big political ads. It's really local TV stations. So really, it reminds me a little bit of the argument about whether is it good for a city or a country to host an Olympics, let's say, or World Cup or whatever. And the local economists, they'll always find some economists to say, oh, man, this is great. It's going to be huge spending growth. Da, da, da. Turns out that's mostly not true. Hotel rooms would have been filled by somebody else. There's all kinds of extra costs for security and infrastructure and so on. Sometimes it pays off in the long run. Sometimes, as in Athens, it really doesn't. The fact is, however, the money gets spent in ways it isn't necessarily the way you want. So if you are in favor of campaign spending, it helps to be running, let's say, a local TV station in Florida, Virginia, or Ohio because you're doing very, very – you know that.
You definitely are.
In terms of, however, the big message I have to say is this. Let's not mistake what you'd call correlation for causality. Correlation, things go together. In other words – winning candidates usually do spend a whole lot of money, and often they spend more than the candidate who loses. So it's easy to draw the conclusion that, oh, it's the money that makes you win. I would suggest we think about a different parallel. Let's pretend you own a sports team, okay? And you say, man, it's really weird. Whenever my team, the Yankees, are winning, the fans are unbelievably happy. So you know what I'm going to do? I am going to do everything I can. I'm going to pay my fans whatever to smile and cheer and clap. That must make the team win. Well, we know that that would be ridiculous. Similarly, just because someone has a lot of money doesn't mean that causes more votes for them. What it is an indication of is that they're a popular candidate. So if you look at today's election with Romney and Obama and a guy named Gary Johnson who's running Libertarian, right? I guess most people probably haven't thought much about Gary Johnson. He'll probably get less than 1% of the vote. So if you're Gary Johnson, do you say, oh, man, if I only could have raised $1 billion, I would have won? I don't think that's remotely true. I think the reason he doesn't raise a lot of money is because he's not going to get a lot of votes. I think the arrow doesn't travel in the way that we intuitively want it to travel.
So the money is more of an indicator than an operator here. Tavis Smiley joins the conversation, co-host of the Tavis Smiley Show and Smiley and West. Tavis, it's great to have you here on this voting day conversation.
John, good to be on. Thanks for the opportunity.
Now, $3 billion doesn't concern you at all. Better spent somewhere else. What does it make you feel?
I hear the argument, and I was thinking how I was intaking this. I think the short answer is it's plausible but not persuasive. money does matter. Jess Unruh, as you know, John Hockenberry, said many years ago in California where I live, that money is the mother's milk of politics. And while we're going to have to wait a day, hopefully not beyond tonight, it may be a late night, but I hope this doesn't drag on for days. And I hope that one guy doesn't win the Electoral College and the other guy wins the popular vote. God, I hope that doesn't happen. But we got to wait a few hours at least to get some concrete data about what did happen. But here's what we know now as the polls are just opening across the country. We already know that this was a campaign of extremes. Too much money, too much time, too many lies. $6 billion is morally profane when you consider all that could have been done for that kind of money. Too much time. There used to be a time in this country, John, as you know, where the campaigning ended and the governing began. Now there's no line between campaigning and governing. So Romney's been running for 4 years. Obama's been running for 4 years in a different sort of way. Too much time spent on campaigning for the White House. And finally, too many lies. I mean, there were too many fact checkers who worked overtime because the lies were being told too often, nuances, half-truths from both sides. So bottom line, some things we have to wait to know tomorrow, some things we know today.
Is it possible that money does pay to distort or transform the identity of a candidate and that Mitt Romney coming in was a rich guy who sent jobs overseas, and that was a message that was paid for by, in the beginning, Newt Gingrich?
Well, see, I think there are two reasons here that underscore the fact that money matters, but it doesn't always make the difference. I do agree with that point. So, for example, the Obama campaign got out early, spending tons and tons of money to frame, to box in Mitt Romney, to make him the kind of caricature that they didn't think the American people would take seriously right about now. Obviously, it didn't work. Whatever one thinks of Mitt Romney, it's a tight race. It's a close race. It's too close to call. So all that money spent way back when didn't make Mitt Romney the devil to enough Americans for this race not to be close, number one. And number two, you know, the fact that, you know, you spend billions of dollars and it comes down to what? Maybe a few counties in Ohio. I mean, how many times can you watch the same TV commercial anyway? So money, I think, does get to a point of diminishing returns.
John, I think Tavis makes a great point. Tavis, hello, by the way. It's nice to hear you on the other line.
Oh, you're still there. Thank you.
Yeah. So I think Tavis makes a great point about the money that was initially spent by the Obama campaign to kind of cast Romney even before it was clear that he'd be the candidate. And then, however, and this kind of reinforces what I'm trying to say, and then, however, where the race changed was debate one. Now, we've talked about debate one a lot, so we don't need to rehearse it. Obama probably underperformed. Romney may have overperformed. But what I would argue is that that was the time at which a lot of people, millions and millions of people, got to see this guy for the first time, really. Most people don't pay that much attention. And they got to see him and they say, oh, wow, he is not – the image that I'm seeing here doesn't match up with what I've been told. Therefore, all that bought perception didn't really buy so much. And that's really my point. And I really don't disagree so much with Tavis. My point is that – if you want to argue that you can buy someone's vote, buy someone's perception of a candidate, that is a very, very low opinion of people. I think more what we see is that people can be kind of herded further into their herd by some messaging, but that I don't think that a TV ad, I don't think that sloganeering really does anywhere near as much to persuade people what camp they're going to be in.
But what does it also do? It also seems to set up, and going back to that first debate, it sets up a moment where people see something authentic happening. There was something authentic happening in that first debate.
Yeah, and that was
Obama was kind of not really engaged, and Romney was, hey, this is me. I mean, he really was like coming out of the cotillion in Philadelphia or something like that. And I think that completely contrasted with all of the fake sounding, pundit sounding rhetoric, and people went, all right, this matters to me. This feels authentic to me. So the money was basically paid to underscore that authentic moment when it happened, because nobody missed it. Tavis?
I wouldn't disagree with that, John, at all, number one. And number two, and I know that now is not the time for this conversation, and maybe we will get to it. More likely, we probably won't. But once this is all said and done, I think it's time for us to have a fundamental, a radical rethinking of how we do politics, particularly and especially presidential politics in this country. And If the majority of the American people are not going to tune in until the first debate or until 2 or 3 months out, then why don't we campaign 3 months out? I mean, why spend billions and billions of dollars over a process, again, that clearly didn't achieve the result that the Obama campaign wanted to paint Mr. Romney a particular way? To your point, John, the American people didn't really see who this guy was, or at least who he pretended to be, until they could see him in a debate with Mr. Obama. So if the American people aren't going to tune in until 3 months out, why do we campaign 2.5 years out?
Final thought, Stephen Dubner.
You know, I think we overemphasize the degree to which the president and the federal government actually impact our daily lives. We get caught up in the idea that it is the Wizard of Oz back there. And I just, you know, I think of Voltaire and at the end of Candide, come let us cultivate our garden, you know. Let's live our lives. Let's do our best. Let's be productive. Let's not shunt the responsibility.
Stephen Dudmer, author and host of Freakonomics Radio from The Takeaway, and Tavis Smiley, co-host of The Tavis Smiley Show and Smiley and West. Thanks, guys, and go vote.
Thanks, man.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.